and you wonder, you ask them, who are you? And they're like, we're Americans. And you're like, okay.
Yeah.
That's not really what I was looking for, but
it's more like, why are there two of us? What's happening?
I think there are some things we should talk about. Where the tethers next door. Talking to you about spooky stuff. Like.
Yeah.
America.
Yeah.
That's it. Period.
Hands across and it, you know.
America.
Dude. They're doing America things. Yeah. America loves to do that.
So, we're the media literacy show from a horror lens where we explore the real life, historical, and societal influences behind our cinematic fears. And as part of our New Year, New Us series, we are talking about the film Us by Jordan Peele, which, as people know, involves some clones, some people who look like us. And you wonder, you ask them, who are you? And they're like, we're Americans. And you're like, okay.
Yeah.
That's not really what I was looking for, but
it's more like, why are there two of us? What's happening?
I think there are some things we should talk about. We have talked briefly about Us and Get Out in our two-part Jordan Peele episode. So if you are interested, you can go back into the Ghoul logs and find our episode about Jordan Peele if you want to learn more about him as a creator, and then also just some fun little tidbits. Some we'll be unpacking again here, but for the most part, this will be like a pretty in-depth standalone episode that we did not get to do for Peele at the time.
Yeah, no, I definitely think we're getting more into it this go around for sure. In fact, there's so many words on the script, and I'm proud of us. Let's get back to it. New Year, New Us.
Yeah, New Year, New Us. Back to the same old thing. And so, yeah, there will be spoilers. It's hard to imagine anyone who hasn't watched Us who would, you know, like, it's not like a sleeper, you know? People aren't like, what? Jordan have a second film? When? That's not the case. Maybe the third one. Maybe people slept on Nope for sure, but I don't think for Us. And so,
yeah,
like I said, there's spoilers. I do recommend watching the film and then hearing spoilers, but I will say it is a film that is really fun on a second watch because of the twist. You catch things and you're privy to kind of some inside jokes and inside moments that made, like, I watched it now like four times. I watched it three times like within a few months because it was on Netflix and then it went away. Each time was a delight because I saw something new. And I was like, oh yeah, that's so good.
I think I even like read in the interview that that's what he wanted us to do. Like, he didn't want you to see it once. Like, if you just see it once, it's fine. Like, if you don't want to look into it further. But the whole intent of the film was to watch it a bunch of times. Because every time, like, you won't be able to get the plot in its entirety unless you've seen it many times. Because you pick up on a lot of stuff that you didn't before.
Or you pick up the Ghouls compendium here and you watch it after listening to us tell you why you should be excited about it, what you can get from it. And hopefully that inspires either a rewatch or an in-depth watch with your media analysis glasses on. So why don't we hop in, because it's going to be a long one. So yeah. It's going to be hopefully not super long, but there's just, honestly, there's so much that could be said about this film. And I had a hard time. I know, Kat, you also had a hard time just picking a thing. Because, like, usually, I will say this, usually with films that are trying to cover and tackle a lot of different issues, mm-hmm. it ends up that, like, you fumble with some of them, right? Like, you want to whole-ass a thing, not half-ass it, right?
Yeah.
And what I found really exciting about us is that it never feels like that. Like, no, every single thing that he decides to tackle has intentionality somewhere. And a lot of the things, like, coexist and, like, lean on each other. A lot of the different mm-hmm. structures that are in place are definitely, like, they just enhance each other. So it's not impossible to weave those together in a way that makes sense. But I still think it was, like, really great that I feel like he never dropped a ball on any of the issues.
Yeah, he was, like, ambiguous enough, you know, for it to be able to be applied to different things. But, I totally agree. It was super intentional where he did put it in.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about it. So Us is from 2019, and it's about a family's serene beach vacation turns to chaos when their doppelgangers appear and begin to terrorize them. And it's directed by Jordan Peele. And we will cover his other film, Get Out, next week, as well as I'm sure we will cover Nope in the future. It's one of my favorite mm-hmm. movies ever, actually. I really love Nope. But let me tell you what happens in Us. And then, as is the usual, I will try to unpack some of the things that I think and what other people think Peele was trying to tell us and convey with his imagery. So Adelaide is a young girl at the fair with her parents in 1986, and we get a glimpse into a tumultuous relationship where her parents are on the outs, and this outing is an attempt to keep things together. Mm-hmm. Adelaide is a curious and quiet child who, after her father wins her a Thriller t-shirt, which is Michael Jackson's Thriller, because 1986, is a questionable prize, since as the mother shares the video, the music video gave her nightmares. Mm-hmm. And this also kind of shows that he's a little disconnected. Like, he's trying to be cool dad, but he's not the one who has to comfort her when she's scared.
Yeah.
So she gets her Thriller t-shirt and she walks off, as children are wont to do, and she finds herself at an Indigenous peoples themed mirror maze. It's not, I said it nicer than what it is.
Yes.
It's like a really kitschy, like, you know, Native people, what do they call it? Like,
caricature.
Yeah, but, like, specifically the journey, because it asks you to find yourself.
Uh-huh.
And they use, like, Native American terminology for it.
Yeah.
It's silly, but it's a mirror maze, and that's, like, where the pun comes. Like, you find yourself because you're looking at yourself.
Yeah.
And so she goes into this spooky little house, and here she encounters a young girl who, very much like the mirrors around her, looks exactly like her, except this one is very real.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, and then to the intro, right? Then we're then brought to the present, where Adelaide is now an adult and she's married to her boisterous, handsome husband, Gabe, played by Winston Duke, and mother to her two very different kids, Zora and Jason. And they are on a trip to the beach house she inherited from her mother. And we start with a mostly charming family film. It's really cute. Clearly, they have a great relationship as a family unit.
Mm-hmm.
And I really loved that just in its existence. Like, one of the things I will, like, mention later, like, this one, unlike Get Out, like, was it trying to be a very big, like, race, like, a commentary, but just the existence of having, like, this Black family at the helm was in itself making a statement, mm-hmm. Sadly, because we don't see that in mm-hmm. film, right? And to have all of these as, like, heroes in a horror film, That was pretty cool. that in itself was just awesome. So Adelaide is still as reserved as ever, if not a bit standoffish, and she interacts with others minimally and plays at the social expectations. She's not super keen on playing people.
Yeah.
And she's also quite overprotective of her youngest, her son, Jason. And we see that play out when he ends up wandering off and seeing the mirror maze himself. He doesn't go in, but she's, like, overreactive, and she also, like, is constantly coddling him throughout the film. She has, like, a, you know, a very intense connection with him because it's her baby. And that she just does. She feels a kindred spirit with him.
The mirror maze is also just like conveniently glossed over as a whole different thing in the future, where it's like, oh, we didn't do anything bad to Indigenous people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Look at this happy, now it's a wizard or something. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah, like they Merlin. Cover it up in the,
Yeah, I'm going to talk about it.
Okay, sorry, go ahead.
No worries. Yeah, it's a big, it's not like, it's funny. It's a good tongue-in-cheek joke because you see it and you're like, oh, okay, because it's 2019. But nothing with Peele is ever just a joke. And so she's very overprotective of her son, Jason. Gabe has a big personality and an obsession with status. And the family does appear like well off. I'd say like middle class, middle class, truly middle class.
Yeah. And the 80s that may have still existed.
Yeah. Yes. And they seem very comfortable. But Gabe is often comparing himself and their lives to their friends' lives, the Tylers. And these friends have a yacht and get plastic surgery, just a little to keep things fresh and interesting. And then Zora is a reserved teen who is over it and glued to her phone. Very classic teen. Love her. She's great. And Jason is a quiet boy who keeps to himself and comes across a bit odd because he doesn't really know how to interact with people. And I do feel like he was a bit on the spectrum.
Uh-huh.
Also, he could just be like little boy. Sometimes they'd be like that.
Yeah.
So throughout the day, Adelaide has been picking up on these strange coincidences, like catching the clock at 11:11, make a wish, or seeing a real spider walking alongside a fake spider, etc. Like all throughout the day, she sees these weird like parallels.
Yeah.
And so she becomes increasingly uneasy. And despite her protestations at going to the beach, she begrudgingly participated in the typical family things. But once night hits, her feelings of unease hit a peak.
Yeah.
And it's this peak that has her confiding in her husband about her childhood trauma of seeing that girl that looked like herself and how it affected her so greatly that she couldn't even talk for months. And she like confides in him and he very much tries to joke it away. He's like, I don't know why this is coming up now. Like, it clearly wasn't important enough for me. As like, we've been married a long time, okay? Zora is a teenager.
Like,
and you never told me about this. And now you want us to leave in the middle of the night. Like, I totally get it. He's not super, like, he's classic, like, horror movie husband. Which also was really great. And so he tries to joke it away. It's very cute and also very frustrating. And she just demands to leave. And while she's doing that, that's when the power goes out. And little Jason comes into their room, scaring the crap out of all of us, and says, there's a family in our driveway. And you're like, I don't ever want to hear my kids say that. Like, they said some crazy stuff. Are you kidding? What do you mean? And then the rest of the film is a fun horror movie of doppelgangers and gore, and I highly recommend watching it and then coming back and watching this episode, because I'm about to get into spoilers. Though, as we mentioned, knowing the twist helps you enjoy the film even more.
Yes.
That's the intention. So here there'll be spoilers. The family in the driveway, donned in red jumpsuits, stand hand in hand. And after an attempt from Gabe to scare the family away, the encounter becomes violent. Gabe is assaulted and left limping, and the rest of the family is round up and forced to listen to story time from the invaders. However, this isn't your typical home invasion film, because these intruders aren't just any old people. They're us.
Yep.
See what Peele did there?
Yeah.
That's what Jason says too. He's pretty quick on the uptick there, because he's like, they're us.
Yeah.
And just as Adelaide had seen in her childhood, before her is herself, the young girl, now an adult too, with her own family that mirrors her own. Mm-hmm. And the intruders are clones, or what Red, Adelaide's dupe, she gave herself a name, calls them tethers. Red lays down some exposition heavy. She tells us that tethers are a failed military experiment, which was intended to control those above. So they do the same, they mirror exactly what's happening above. And it failed. Maybe because my interpretation is it failed because the tethers were controlled by the people up top, instead of the opposite.
Yeah.
So that's not very helpful to them to just have people doing the same thing. So they just abandon them.
Yeah. And classic.
They're still there. They're still existing. They're still connected to the people up here. And they are cursed forever to imitate, like puppets on strings, the acts that appear up here, only with significantly less information or understanding. It's honestly, one of the most horrifying thing is just thinking about that. Like, not the gore, not all that. It's just like, imagine you are a tether and everything you've ever done is nothing to do with you. You have no context for why you do the things you do.
Yeah.
I was like, I feel bad for my tether because I have a lot of tattoos and my poor tether is just getting needles all up in them and they don't know why for hours. Like, I'm really sorry, my tether. I get it. So they have no understanding of what happened. So Red explains the parallels where Adelaide found her charming prince and Gabe. Red was forced to be with the brutish Abraham because that's Gabe's tether.
Yeah. Right?
While Adelaide had Jason by way of C-section in the care of a hospital, which is its own conversation. Red was left alone to cut her boy Pluto from herself alone. Yeah. Right. And while we above feast on delicacies or hell, even McDonald's, the tethers eat only rabbit, which is a reliable, fast, self-renewable food resource.
Yeah.
And raw.
Yeah.
Which is funny when we see it later, but it's gross. And so because of this, Red has led a revolution of the tethers, bringing them topside to kill or maim their doppelgangers and to form a Hands Across of America chain for reasons.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about what we feel like maybe that reason is. The Wilsons, which is Adelaide's fam, fight slowly against the tether thems until Adelaide eventually finds herself in the underground tunnels that house the tethers. And here she fights Red and they relive the moments of childhood where Adelaide had learned to dance to communicate after the traumatizing experience of meeting herself. So she said she lost her voice. She couldn't communicate. She learned how to dance. And while Red learned to dance alongside her, she broke free of their link and it allowed her to make this revolution possible. So this dance allowed Adelaide to communicate and gave Red freedom.
Yeah.
Super important. Adelaide fights Red alongside the dance sequences of their past, and eventually Adelaide wins. I will say, just as like a side note, I was just thinking this too when we were watching Get Out, but there's a lot of references in this film to The Shining, including like Adelaide limping after Red. There's a lot of the like Kubrick stare, where they're like this, they look down. Young Adelaide does that quite a lot, which like really leads into like who's the hero, because like every time we see Adelaide, just so you know, Adelaide here, she's looking a little sus. And so there's a lot of references to Kubrick, but that just made me think like of the line that I still love from Stephen King, where he was like, Kubrick made a very beautiful film. But just like the man, it's like has no substance. I was like, dang. I feel like that's such the opposite in that this movie is also beautiful, but intentional.
Yeah.
And that's the same thing I felt about Get Out, too. I was like, so much of that film is beautiful and intentional. And I was just like, so it's nice for him to have these motifs and this nod to like a very profound and impactful horror director, and to be better as much as someone can be. So after Adelaide fights Red, she wins and she rescues Jason, and they go to the surface and they're ready to live their lives again.
Woo!
Only we find that there's one more little twist. Which makes the second watch really fun, and a third and fourth watch. And that is that all those years ago when Adelaide met Red, well, I guess she wasn't Red. She was tethered.
It is confusing. I got a mix up in mind too.
All those years ago when Adelaide met Tether Adelaide, Tether Adelaide attacked Adelaide and swapped places with her. making the original Adelaide red. And our Adelaide is actually a tether. And she's been the tether all along. So Jason becomes very suspicious of his mother and has seen her on more than one occasion acting quite tether-like, like grunting and becoming very violent and ravenous. She resorts to, like, she loses her language and starts kind of speaking tether when she's fighting and killing people. Because it's a horror movie. Yeah. This whole time she's the tether, which makes Jason and Zora have tethers, which might explain Jason's behavior. And so it makes you feel, I don't know if it makes me feel worse for Red. I think, honestly, that it's still bad. Like, I still think it's bad for Adelaide. Like, if you you need, like, she did what she needed to do to get out of there.
Yeah.
Right? She princed and pauper herself. And I get it. So to me, like, I don't really, like, I don't feel bad for Red. So if she died, I don't feel bad. Because you came from the top anyway. If anything, I feel bad for everybody else. I feel bad for Abraham and Pluto and even Kitty's tether. They don't have names. So let's talk about tethers. What do they mean? And what maybe this film is trying to tell us, right? Mm-hmm. So as I said, there's so much to talk about for this film. It is gluttonous with its imagery and commentary, and it's overflowing with context, history, and scoldings. But here's a quick glance over some of the themes and topics worth mentioning, and by no means the extensive list. And please share your own thoughts and feelings. And it's all subjective, baby. So first thing I'll mention is military experiments. So first, it's not a far-fetched idea that the government is conducting experiments on its citizens. As we as Americans, and even the government itself, has uncovered and revealed and admitted to many real instances of this occurring. I'm thinking MKUltra and literally anything. Like, they have a whole, like, they do it all the time. They will reveal.
They love to.
Well, they reveal crazy things that they've done to distract us from the stuff that they're continuing to do.
Yeah. And it's like, a lot of the time, it's like, they'll just keep doing it till someone catches them. And then they'll be like, oh, geez, you're right. We should stop. That was horrible. And let's never talk about that again. Here's another thing that's shiny. And look over here.
Yeah.
Look over here.
Let's tell you about how we've had aliens this whole time so that you don't worry about, like, the wars that we're profiting off of, right? Like, and I also wondered, like, some of the crazy things I've heard from the government, like what they've done to people, and like, because you feel like a crazy conspiracy theorist, but it's not crazy, right? Like, the government has, like, the FBI has literally killed people for specific purposes, right? So it's like, if we know that we know those crazy things, what don't we know? And as I said, this film is not intended to be commentary on racism in America in the same way that Get Out was. There's no ignoring the history of using black bodies for experiments in America. So even though the tethers were an abundance of Americans, our main characters are black. And so that in itself, I think, starts a conversation. And when asked who they are, Red remarked, "We're Americans," which felt really real, because what's more American than experimenting on your own people in an effort to control them? And many people were dissatisfied with the throwaway mention of the military experiments because of the way it was, like, unexplained and abandoned. Because, like, she was like, yeah, they did it and then they were gone. And people are like, but what else? I was like, what do you mean, what else?
Yeah, they love to do that. It.
Like,
they do that all the time.
I was like, yeah, okay. Not a minute of me was like, no, I need more. It's like, no,
it's whatever
I got
president's, like, latest whim. Like, the amount of abandoned American military experiments, I bet, is huge, because it's like whoever's in charge makes a whole new thing. The amount of, like, nonprofits that just get defunded because someone wanted to do a different thing, or, like, countless things where they're just like, we have a new president, so all the rules are different. It's
There's
constantly
entire
changing.
Towns that, like, are uprooted and moved and drowned, and then people just forget
The Mandela effect theory is that, like, they're doing that on purpose, literally just so that we don't remember history correct and then doubt all our perception of reality. It's a fun thing.
Yeah. Woo. And again, not far-fetched, especially with this. So thank you, Kat, leads us right into my next big point, which is about American history and the erasure of that history. So back in 1986, when we saw Adelaide go into the Hall of Mirrors, it was themed after Native peoples, and it asked people to find themselves. And its existence in the 80s is completely expected of the colorblind era of America, right? They didn't think there was anything wrong with it, even though it makes us feel uncomfortable now. And when it's renovated to get with the times, it's been painted over roughly to become Merlin's Hall of Mirrors. It's so pathetically painted over. And as was done with the Tether experiment, we've glossed over a history and a tasteless moment. America is so very talented when it comes to ignoring our history, especially that of the indigenous peoples in our Black and brown communities. And so in the end, when Adelaide is comforting her son, she reassures him that they'll be safe and that everything will be normal, and she's blatantly ignoring the massacre outside and the miles-long protest. And for Adelaide, the American, moving past and erasing monumental pain and trauma is a skill that we all learn. So it's very intentional. In an article on Vox titled "Jordan Peele's Us, the Big Plot Twist Explained," writer Aja Romano shows us the many instances of the selective American memory in the film and designates it as a core theme, saying, "The movie constantly reminds its audience that America's story is one of history perpetually being forgotten or overwritten, like the genocide of Native Americans, whose iconography gets briefly appropriated and then hastily removed for the maze that starts the story. Characters frequently speak of forgetting things. Adelaide's entire character is rooted in forgetting. The ones who don't have the luxury of losing their memories are the ones who remain underground. I never forgot you, Red tells Adelaide. That's because not only are they forced to live out approximations of real life without any agency over their own bodies and identities, but they are the only witnesses to their own misery and enslavement. In Red's words, a good memory is the key to escape." Because how are you going to fight against that if you don't remember that it was a problem?
Yeah, you have to, like, know that it could be better in order to recognize how awful what is happening is.
And Red knows, because she used to be the upper class here. She used to be the 1%.
Yeah.
We'll also talk briefly about Hands Across America, because that's the thing that comes through in the film. The shirt that Adelaide is wearing underneath the thriller tee that she gets is Hands Across America. So, and that's what Red wants everyone to do, is gather hands in this protest of Hands Across America. So you're like, what is her obsession with this? So Hands Across America was a benefit campaign that was sponsored by America for Africa. That's the key thing here. It's the same people who did the We Are the World. We are the world. That was a great song. Gathered all the famous celebrities. And the same thing happened with Hands Across America, where people were supposed to join hands in a human chain for 15 minutes across America. And America is very large and has deserts and other topography that would be hard to join hands across in the middle of May. So it didn't work.
I wonder if they thought of that, you know? I mean, it doesn't look like they did.
No. It was planned to raise between 50 and 100 million, but it only raised 34 million, and only 15 of that million was distributed to charity after they deducted the cost to produce the event. But 6.5 million people joined hands in various locations across the country at events that also boasted celebrity participants, just like the song, except it wasn't like a full chain because they were just like pieces of them.
Even Reagan was there.
Of course.
He endorsed it.
Ted Kennedy and all of Massachusetts was not there. They were very mad. They weren't a part of the press. So what does it have to do with us? So, like I said, Adelaide was wearing the shirt. Adelaide turned red, was wearing the shirt. And so when new Adelaide steals her thriller shirt, she's left with that. And given the trauma she experiences, it's not hard to imagine that her little mind held on to that. Right? And she hopes to create a big movement that speaks to the disenfranchisement of her people, which are now the Tethered. And if we're to look at the Tethered as a representation of American classism, then this is even further ironic, given that the original event was designed to raise awareness about homelessness and hunger across the world. Issues that we focus often, that we focus on without looking at our own country first. So the fact that it's like homelessness and hunger in Africa, like we don't have that right here.
There's so much.
Right. So that itself is like ironic. And then, her sweet little girl brain was like, this was the last time I saw a bunch of people happy. That meant something, right? To her, it meant something. And in this Esquire article I found called Why Hands Across America is So Vital to Jordan Peele's Us, they say, in the final shot of Us, Jordan Peele reframes the awareness campaign to show that Americans often turn a blind eye to the social ills that exists, quite literally, just below our country's surface. Mm-hmm. They mention, like, that the tunnels are all throughout America. Right. Yeah. And this is just another instance of, like, us forgetting or pretending. Yeah. It's all about just ignoring, like, if we don't look at it, it's not real.
It makes me think of the cheese that lives in tunnels under our country. The, like, billions of pounds of cheese that they did so that the dairy industry would not go bankrupt.
I love that. That's
so America, crazy. Under America, is just an absurd amount of hoarded cheese.
Wisconsin.
Woo. It's goes even deeper. It wouldn't even fit just in Wisconsin.
I'm just saying, there's the cheese heads.
Yeah, I know. I gotta get away.
On to the next theme, which is, I think, the biggest one. It is classism, where Get Out was very big on racism in America. It was not even pretending to be anything else. It was like, this is what it is. And you can't pretend, right? This is about classism, bud. And so this is the rub. There's the rub, okay? This is the heart of the film, in my opinion. There are so many moments that express this idea of the upper classes' effects on the lower classes and the impact their choices have on the rest of America. One of my favorite moments was seeing the senseless scars on Kitty's tether. So Kitty was the other family friend. Mm-hmm. And she has these scars on her face because of the Botox and the work that was done by Kitty. So imagine having your face sliced into without any rhyme or reason, all because someone up top wanted to look younger.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's so, like, that's my tattoos, that's so senseless. I'm like, it's cool art. Anybody else would be like, that's a lot of money you just spent on that. And you're right.
And when they're, like, on the update, you still recognize it as something that was perceived as making them beautiful, because then they're doing it, like, while they're doing the lipstick and they're cutting back into their face in the mirror, like, look how pretty I am.
Yeah. Without, like, the proper way to do that, right? Mm-hmm. Like, their way is, like, this barbaric way, because she cuts it, but she doesn't have Botox. She doesn't have the science that did that to her. She just has scars. And she thinks that gets twisted to scars equals pretty.
Yeah.
Because my tether is happy and keeps doing this to us.
Yeah.
My up tether. I don't know what they would call us.
I think we're just both tethers, but one's up, one's down.
Yeah. We also see this effect again when Pluto, who is Jason's tether, reveals he has burn scars all over the bottom half of his face. Mm-hmm. And throughout the film, even before we see the tethers, Jason has been playing with this, like, lighter toy in an attempt at some magic trick. But the device never ignites. And, like, Zora makes this offhanded comment, like, just tell us what it's supposed to do and we'll imagine it.
It's just a fidget, man. It's just a fidget.
It is 100% a fidget, but it's supposed to make a light. Yeah, yeah. Right? So it never ignites for Jason. But for Pluto, it must have lit more than enough times and one enough to harm him greatly. Right? So not even knowing the effect that that, like, fidget would have on Pluto, who's down there. And Jason's obsession with magic and fidget is twisted into pyromania for Pluto, who otherwise has no explanation for constantly being assaulted by fire.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with the, like, scars equals beauty. Pluto is like, fire equals fun.
Yeah.
Because that's what my person's doing. And someone influenced me and told me that's what fun is.
Yeah.
And now that's what I do. We can see it in the ways that Red and Adelaide's trauma are shaped by their environment and access to resources. So how one had, through understanding and care regarding mental health, was able to find her voice with words yeah. that she had never had before. Because she was a tether. She didn't have that language. And then she developed it. And the more yeah. the other was silenced so traumatically that her voice was irreparably damaged, which I will talk more on that in a bit. But it's just, yeah, that's one instance of kind of seeing healthcare inequality. But in an interview with the cast of the film on The Hollywood Reporter titled Us Movie Explained, is Jordan Peele creating a Get Out trilogy? Actor Winston Duke explains his no hard feelings approach towards Abraham. And he says, I never, ever judged Abraham. I never said he was a bad guy. He was just a guy finally getting a chance to live in the light. Gabe gets to have healthcare, which manifests in his glasses. He gets to see. He gets to talk. He gets to express himself. And Abraham doesn't. He's squinting and is very tactile. So that's one of a really like heartfelt moment when he sees yeah. the glasses and he like puts them on. And I remember like, Kat, you've been talking about instances where like with glasses or other things being like, whoa, you all see like this? Like yeah. not even knowing that. That was an option, or that other people were experiencing the world differently than you, because you don't even have that.
You have no frame of reference for it. So, yeah, very much, very much that. I remember when I found out I had narcolepsy, and then the first time I took medicine, I like sobbed because I was like, "How do other people feel like this the whole time? How?" And yeah. like just very genuinely, like it's very real when you don't have access to the medication or healthcare thing that you need. It's mind-blowing when you're like, oh my God, other people just have this all the time. It's mm-hmm. crazy.
And the potential, right? The potential mm-hmm. you could have you that. Like, and that's something yeah, so basic, my life would be different. Right? Yeah. It's not even just like access to books and education. It's like access just to be able to see the world. And mm-hmm. that enough could have totally transformed Abraham. Like, yeah. that's probably why you're so British and like angry. He has headaches all the time.
Yeah, you can't see.
So the other thing I want to talk about was free will and individuality. So due to the like puppetry nature of the tether's existence and Peele's intentional zombie motifs shown through like the glitchy, like stagnant movements of the tethers below in the flashback, as well as a mm-hmm. reference to Thriller, we can see the theme of individuality, or rather the lack thereof. So we on the Ghouls have covered zombies in many episodes, live and pre-recorded, and one of the core themes behind those brainless creatures is individuality, and specifically how capitalism strips us of that. So Dawn of the Dead was a direct commentary on our obsession with things, the mall being both a safe haven and a natural place for shuffling mindless drones. Mm-hmm. And though the tethers are obviously controlled and powerless, having no input on the trajectory of their lives, I can't help but also feel that Gabe was a zombie too. Mm-hmm. Because his obsession with having what the Tylers have was performative, even if he didn't know why he needed the boat or the backup generator, right? He was still needing yeah. these things and he didn't know why. It's because someone yeah. told him he should.
Yeah.
That's exactly what the tethers are doing. So that's it's very clearly they don't have any autonomy. So yeah. Then there's also race. So the power of having a black family as the lead, wearing Howard sweatshirts and being lovable is super powerful in and of itself. And they represent mm-hmm. further the quintessential nuclear family, but a version of such we've never seen on screen, or we rarely get to see on screen. Because not only is this family black, but they're all dark skinned. Mm-hmm. Like very intentionally, these people were selected. That's how Peele be. Right? Uh-huh. He has such a talent for lighting and showing dark skin on screen. And it's really beautiful to see. That's one uh-huh. of my favorite things about Nope specifically, was some of those scenes were actually breathtaking. The way that yeah. He could really trick the cameras, because cameras were invented racist. Yep. If anyone wants to hear about that, I'd love to talk about it. It's one of my favorite things to talk about. Because it's crazy. And also the art and music is all very intentional in the film. It's all very black. Like their house and the art within their house and in the background, like it's, you can't uh-huh. like look at that and not think that Peel is trying to say something.
And
further in that Vox article that I mentioned quite a minute ago, the writer goes on to point out instances where the film can't help but be commentary on race in America, saying, I think it's pretty easy to look at the gentrification of Santa Cruz, the political correctness washing on the, of the carnival, and the irony of fuck the police blasting in a white person's house while they're being attacked, and to understand Peel is addressing contemporary race relations in the United States. Mm-hmm. It's about how we, as a country, try to just rename, reclaim, and wash out the stains of the past as if that will just make everything better. It's like, it's classism, but the big thing is like, forget, don't look at it, pretend it's not there, distract ourselves. And my last thing that I'll just say is that there's some things in the film that blew my mind just in the creation of them. And so I want to just touch on that and then I'll be done.
Yeah. You got it. You're killing it.
So one of the biggest things that really got me this recent watch was the dance that healed Adelaide and set Red free. So Kat shared a really great article, thank you Kat, on the Brooklyn Rail by Luke Williams that had me geeking out even harder for this film because I am not a dancer and neither is Kat. And we both talked about why not in a previous episode about dance where we had to invite a guest on to actually talk about dance because we aren't it. And I do say, I really do hope that Allie one, who was our guest for that episode one, watch the film and hopefully got some things out of it in that dance sequence that maybe I definitely missed the first few times I watched it. I was like, okay, the dance is cool, but I didn't get it.
It's a very beautiful dance,
I didn't
for sure.
Get it.
Yeah.
Now I get it.
Well, tell us.
And then I hope that Allie, if you've watched this film, you listen to this episode and you also appreciate this commentary. So thanks to this article, I now look at the film with renewed interest and admiration, and the attention to detail by Peele and his team is amazing, and I'm so grateful for it. So the article is titled It's Our Time Now, The Aesthetics of Horror in Jordan Peele's Us, and it explains the power of the dance performance. The dance recital shown in the third act comes about when Adelaide, too traumatized to communicate, finds a new way to communicate through dance. And her dance and Red's mirror of it below gives Red the power to untether herself from Adelaide. I think she calls it like the untethering what the revolution is, but she's already done that.
Yeah.
She's already grown to act independently of it. And so the two dances, though started as a mirror, break away into two distinct and powerful pieces that represent the two girls and solidify their individuality from each other. So it's a very long quote because I'm not a dancer. So I'm going to say what William said. Because when Kat explains like science and we're not scientists, we have to quote the scientists. This is me doing that for the dancers.
Yeah.
So Williams explains, dance by Ashley McCoy, young Adelaide's conventional Balanchine, I hope I said that right, solo directly contrasts young Red's distorted version choreographed by Hollander. The result is a hybridized but recognizable nutcracker duet that sets the young dancers in supportive opposition. Young Adelaide's movement is elongated, stretching through her arms and legs to provide a sense of weightlessness and elevation. Young Red, however, never elevates on her toes. Her arms and legs are bent, and she remains grounded through her feet. While young Adelaide's jets and battlements elegantly slice into the air, gravity anchors Red's body to the earth, where she contorts against the wall and crawls along the ground. Her movement originates from her core and lower back, providing a more internal orientation. What's more, the pas de deux emphasizes the embodied aesthetics through the use of the stage space. So young Adelaide's movements take place for the most part in center stage. Illuminated by the spotlight, young Adelaide moves through an abundance of space, articulating an unfettered transcendence, perhaps even a soul. Young Red, by contrast, makes use primarily of the floor and wall, straining against surfaces that resist her expansion. In the final fight scene, the rapid contrast between the young dueling yet partnering ballerinas comments on movement with and without a soul. And that was really cool. And definitely, I'd say, read that article and then rewatch that scene. I'll also play it over this video.
Because I notice it, like, her on the ground versus the other one being, like, so light. Like, it's so true.
Yeah.
It's, like, now I get it. I was like, that's pretty. But it didn't even occur to me that, like, she has to operate differently below. And that that's a representation of, like, what you have in your space, too. And it's a whole big thing, the fact that we have a black ballerina. Because we don't get to see them often. And that, I can't. Last thing about the film to geek about is another thing that Kat found. Thank you, Kat. And this is Red's voice. So when watching, you'll notice Red's voice is quite crispy.
Once upon a time.
And underused crispy. And nervous. It's crispy. Mm-hmm. And my initial interpretation was simply that Red never had to use her voice for this language down there. I also want to note that Adelaide, who's formerly the Tether, is often at a loss for words and even tells Kitty that she's not very good with them. And so she just forgets them all the time or just doesn't know to use them. Which is like another nod. But knowing Red is actually OG Adelaide solidified the idea for me that she can speak English, which is more than any of the other Tethers can do. But because they don't speak with words, only grunts and other sounds, she's been out of practice. So when she started talking, I was like, okay, that makes sense. She'd be like, what? You know, because she never did it. But in an interview with the Hollywood Reporter, Us Movie Explained is Jordan Peele creating a Get Out trilogy. Nyong'o explains how she discovered the voice for Red and worked to make it, as well as the all the other Red mannerisms, distinct from Adelaide. I read this quote from Jordan Peele that was like, when she was in Red character, she was like in character all the time, even when she was like by herself. And that when he was like afraid of her, he was like, I was afraid to be like, no, we got to take that again. I didn't like it. I thought she would kill me. You know, love that. That's so cute.
But the delivery was like,
She was too good. She was like in character. Nyong'o, as brilliant as she is, decided to base it on a real life medical condition called spasmodic dysphonia, which can be caused by emotional and physical trauma. And she said in that interview, your vocal cords involuntarily spasm, creating this odd airflow. She says after she was inspired after hearing someone with that condition speak, and she says, I worked with my ENT and a vocal therapist to be able to do it, but keep my voice safe because it's quite dangerous for a healthy vocal box to do that kind of thing. Then I built off of that, which makes me think of like people who sing like metal. There's a way that you're supposed to like do scream so that you're, it preserves your vocal cords. And then the absolutely last thing I'll say, because I do feel like it is needed in this time, is very sad because I admire Jordan Peele and his work. I appreciate his impact on horror cinema greatly. A lot. I have a lot in my room. That's Jordan Peele. And I do really try not to idolize or even like any creators too hard because... Yeah. In this day and age, you just really can't, right? But I will admit that I have placed Peele on a pedestal in the past and in a place of admiration greatly that I try not to do for anybody. However, it is in moments like this, in the midst of an unpublicized and propaganda-ridden genocide, that I am greatly reminded precisely of why we don't idolize other humans, or they're going to let you down. Because last year, Peele signed a letter alongside many other celebrities that make us sad now in support of Biden and confirming lies spread by the Israeli government. And the letter ultimately asked for the release of hostages by the Hamas terrorists, but it is another example of people ignoring the crux of the issue at heart. I can see him signing it because it's like, oh yeah, free the hostages. But I can't give him the benefit of the doubt because he made this film and because of who he is. Like, that's where I'm at. It's like, you couldn't do research. You couldn't look into that. You couldn't read that whole letter before you put your name on something. So for me, it's like this it was intentional. And so I also think like his silence after that fact, in fact, people are angry with him in the
Yeah, the fact he hasn't said anything since.
I don't see watermelon anywhere, right? It speaks volumes. And so it makes it really hard to look at this film in all of its meaning and not be confused by him missing the entire point of a real life issue that's happening now. But it was put perfectly by this TikToker I found, Joris Explains, where they ask, this is from their TikTok, and I will link it in our blog. How do you make the movie Us, which is one of the most scathing criticisms of a society that is built upon the dehumanization of an underclass, a piercing analysis of the process of demonizing a group of people and how they end up taking on the traits that you force upon them and inevitably end up committing barbaric acts of terror as their only resort to force society to reckon with their existence and reclaim a glimpse of their freedom. To have the foresight to represent what is happening in Gaza right now, 5 years before this happens, and still sign a letter in support of Israel committing genocide.
Yeah.
So, because we, you know, we can't ever just let things lie. I'm going to pass it over to Kat, who's going to keep going with this same feel.
Yeah. As a trigger warning, we're going to be covering the same stuff. Racism, oppression, genocide, classism, like it's all gonna be in there. So in my section, my primary topic is also classism, racism, and access to care. So Us is a film that is intentionally titled because it is a critique of us. The main conflict of the film could be interpreted in countless ways and has through an array of analysis articles. So what I'm going to say is not necessarily new, but rather a connecting of dots on like a board, you know, with the red string. Mm-hmm. In analyzing Us, it positions itself as a critique of American society and our need to other people to justify and rationalize the atrocities that convenience capitalism causes without us seeing. The damage of our daily comforts concealed from us as if hidden in an underground bunker. Social media acts as a gateway to that bunker, but still at a distance. To those who live in comfort, the privilege, the pain of those tethered to that comfort and their actions is not of their concern. This is not exclusive to class issues in America, but also through how America and other Western countries destroy, like literally decimate and destroy and colonize other nations for their benefit. Now, there are so many examples of this that it would take the entire episode to outline every single one of them. America does this. America and Europe and all, they just love to do it. It's their favorite. Genocide is their favorite thing. They do it the most, I would argue, of all the countries out there. They just love to do it.
I think it's like, God, it's like every few days there a country celebrates its independence from England.
So it's a thing. It's a thing. So basically, because of this, I'm only going to name two that are current. Thinking specifically about the genocide and exploitation taking place in the Congo right now, so that we can have cell phones, vapes, and other technologies, or the current American-funded genocide taking place in Palestine to steal their natural resources of fresh water, oil, and gas. It all ties together as a critique on how people, and especially people who look like me, are willing or unwilling to sacrifice their day-to-day comforts as well as their ingrained biases to work as a collective. There was a video that covered this nicely on TikTok from a user, Sarah Talks Art, that unpacks a characteristic of white supremacist culture called right to comfort and how people who look like me feel very strongly that they have a right to their comforts, even if it comes at the cost and exploitation of others, that many people are not willing to give up their vapes or their Starbucks to save literal human lives, like even after they know sometimes, or just like, that's a lot. It's nuanced. We don't know enough. I'm going to just continue to go. which is super gross. And we'll find out in a bunch of years how gross that really was. And everyone would be like, no, I didn't do that. We're America. Just cover it up with a little history. Bow. Yep. So they'll choose to look away as long as it's the means to maintain their own sense of safety and their view of the world. Because I'll get into like why people need that later, but it's like a big thing where people just, if they look at it and know, they couldn't allow it. Like, I think that is our human nature. Like, if we know what's happening, we cannot allow it. And then so people just have conditioned themselves, especially here, to look away from what's happening because it's their way of coping and rationalizing and making things sane. Because if you know that this has been happening, you'd be outraged. You'd be burning everything down because it's horrific.
That was the summer of 2020.
Yeah.
Is so, everyone knowing?
Yeah. Additionally, many feel that they are entitled to that peace without any guilt or consequence. And this film critiques the willingness to not look, to not empathize, to save ourselves at the expense of others. So something that also stood out to me in relating this to American classism is the duality of Red and Adelaide, that they actually aren't different. Like, they are just clones. They're two of the same people. When understanding how trauma impacts the brain, this makes a lot of sense. The theory that the tethers do not have souls, I think, is incorrect because we're given an unreliable narrator of someone who is up top coming down there and being like, these people have no soul.
They have no tact.
Yeah.
No, yeah.
And talking about, like, their language, like, in all linguistic studies, in a horrible thing that happened in the real world, there was a girl who was kept underground until adulthood, and she did not learn how to talk because she didn't develop language skills before her teenage years. So scientists and linguists were able to deduce that if you do not learn language before puberty finalizes, that it is significantly harder, if, like, not impossible, for your vocal cords and your brain to learn how to speak. It's not, like, completely impossible. Like, the human brain is plastic. You can come back from trauma and things like that, but it is very, very difficult to learn languages after you've completed puberty, just because of how your brain develops. Additionally, it's just, they're the same person. We see this in Adelaide, who is a tether, but was given the love and support and had their needs met once they come up and find the real Adelaide's parents, and who was able to live a relatively normal life. She shows a great capacity for love and all the makings of a soul. Adelaide's existence makes it impossible to argue that the tethers are soulless, ultimately saying that all people have the capacity for good as much as they have the capacity to cause harm. The only difference between us and the tethered is the tethered were denied care their entire lives. Their needs, their autonomy were disregarded their entire lives. If given the same opportunity, every tether could have been like the Adelaide we see on screen. And if they would have grown up in the same safety and care, they could have turned out the same as their doubles above. There is also the understanding that the tethers have spent the entirety of their existence in survival mode, never given the opportunity to use the other areas of their brain. Villainizing the tethers, I don't think, was Peele's intent, in my opinion, which extra makes it like, what do you mean you signed that letter? It just doesn't make sense. So in a review on High on Films, contextualizing Jordan Peele's Us by Mokalika Batabia, they outline a similar way of thinking, stating the shocking reveal towards the end makes the character of Red and Adelaide interchangeable. The twist works only if we accept our own brutality and our role in allowing the market to dehumanize and silence our desires, so far so that we even forget our language. We thus become choked in expression and are pulled down to bestiality. Even though the events that ensue in the movie highlight a fight for survival, that ease with which the children, Jason and Zora, embrace their killer identity and then casually argue about their kill count to win a chance to drive to the car during the apocalypse scenario only confirms how we are intrinsically tethered to our other. Every single human that exists can do big bad or big good. It's a choice and also a matter of circumstance. So the tethers have souls. That's my moral of the story. The reveal in the movie, making Red and Adelaide interchangeable, is seen as working only if the viewers acknowledge their own ability to cause harm. And so you can't have, like, supervillains, because those don't exist. Like, they're just humans who do bad things. And you could, like, you can't be like, I cannot understand or fathom how anyone could do that. It's like, yes, anyone can do a bad thing. You know, yeah. You need to remove that idea from your brain, because everyone can do messed up things. And it's basically acknowledging their own brutality and complicity in allowing the dehumanization and silencing of desires of that market. So that all of humanity has the capacity to do monstrous things under horrific circumstances. And when we dehumanize other populations, the harm done to them feels lighter to carry to those enacting said harm, but it shouldn't. We see this in Adelaide's reaction to the tethered children dying, because she knows that they could have been given the same life she had. That if given, they may have turned out differently. They may still be alive. Like, you can see it when she's seeing Zora's tether die, like just the pain in her eyes. Like, she feels genuine emotion and sympathy for, like, what's taken place, as if that was her daughter. Because she knows, like, in any other scenario, her daughter could have been in the same position if put down there. So even the actors did not view their alternate selves as villain, as Gabe said, with a quote from Winston Duke's view of Abraham. And essentially, I'm arguing very strongly that the Tethers are not the villains of the story, but rather the system that created and left them in that bunker, and as well as like the people above. The ones like we do, like we're like, oh no, what if the us from below came up here and murdered us? The villains are us. And honestly, if there is a, I also think of like the countless countries that like America and Western civilization has just dumped plastic on, and they've just been living their lives. And they're like, what do you mean? Like if everyone who has been tethered to America's harm came to get us, I would understand.
Yeah, it's so real.
So the villains are us. And in an article titled Jordan Peele's Us is not so secretly about class by Noah Ransom, they outline how the enemy in this film is our own dismissive neglect of problems that persist. They say in Us, the tethered are effigies of the same situational classism. They're trapped mentally and physically and ignored. While the Wilson family and others bicker about the rocking and their fancier tugboat, those with the capacity to be just as happy grow darker from fucked up circumstances. And they go on to say, for the functions of classism and marginalization traps to work, the presence of it must never be explicitly seen or acknowledged for what it is. The powerful must do as Ronald Reagan did in Jordan Peele's reference to Hands Across America. Fund, take the credit for every victory, regardless of the contradictory attitudes towards the poor. And the potential horrors must be presented with a positive duality, a pair of scissors, a Black family in America, and a horror film. The concepts that we are inherently individualistic, selfish, and out for ourselves only benefit our oppressors at the end of the day. We unpack this when we cover disaster utopias in the film The Mist, the idea that humans will immediately turn against each other in crisis, that we'll always prioritize ourselves over others on instinct only benefits our oppressors. So like that quote was from before, for the functions of classism and marginalization traps to work, the presence of it must never explicitly be seen or acknowledged for what it is. And if that statement is true, that shines a more positive light on our natural instincts as humans. But also like gives more context to like, if the people above knew truly that the tethers existed, would they have been able to cope with that? And I think no. And essentially, if
Adelaide broke.
Yeah. So it's like, if we understood what was really happening, if the government had a worse PR team, everyone would be freaking out. I'll just say that. So the film is a message that we need to educate ourselves. We need to see what's happening. We need to unlearn that taught behavior to look away from what is hard. The tethered population in us also showcases that collectivism is the key to revolution. The tethered population that rises up in us is far more united than the people who live up top and largely succeed because they're not bogged down by the material individualistic teachings of capitalism. They are not in it for themselves. They are like, we need freedom and we're going to work together to get it. And that's because when they're like rationalizing it, they're like, I'll give you money, I'll give you our boat, and they're like, we don't want that, bro. What even is a boat, like, to me? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't care. I want glasses. I want
food.
Yeah,
that's not bunnies.
Yeah, like literally, like, you have no idea what my life has been. I want a choice. Offer me a boat. So exactly. So what they wanted was basic human rights, something that material items will never solve. They work together and refuse to exist in these inhumane living conditions and do so by any means necessary. But that does not make them the villains. They will not be denied autonomy and sunlight anymore. So they rise up. A line that still stands out to me that shows Red's motivation and view that a collective could have existed was when they said like they didn't understand why Adelaide didn't take them with them when they escaped. But that's really put into context of like, she's like, why does my freedom have to come at the cost of Red's? And that's where the divide is clear, because like the tethered humans and the topside humans do not view each other as safe, because Adelaide in this context was Red's oppressor. They didn't know, but like, why would she take her with her? Because like, that you were the one oppressing me this whole time, like, what do you mean? they are a group that has been exploiting them unknowingly this whole time. So it just makes you really, like, I sympathize way more with the Tethers after this rewatch and after reading all of this than I had in the previous watches, as well as, like, you kind of see, like, what it means to be on the up and, like, why would you want to be there? Like, other than, like, the fact that we want, like, basic human rights, but, like, why would you want to allow for the Tethers to live underground? Everyone should live up. And if you're not willing to do that, then... So, yeah. So that line hits a little more once you know the twist on the second and third watch throughs. And when looking at the horrors of the world, it's easy to become cynical. I just threw a lot at you. That was a lot. It's heavy. All of the world is heavy. Like, so much awful is happening all the time, and we're inundated, or we hide from it. So we use social media as this method to, like, inform ourselves, but also distract. And it is so much easier to look away from what is happening around us. But there are also so many people who do not have that luxury. It's been so ingrained in us in capitalism to do so. And we see that in the film when, like, it's instilled in childhood, where we're, like, taught not to, like, look at what's around us for our own safety. It's, we see that in young Adelaide when they ignore the homeless person with the sign. It's like, it's ingrained when we're young. So, but the hopeful piece is that there are so many people who are actively fighting against the issues present. We just can't see them sometimes. And all of our actions, even though it feels like we're in a really hopeless situation right now, that, like, we don't have the power to change, it might just be that we are not seeing the fruits of the labor yet. And I saw this really amazing video where Michaela Loach, they're, like, a climate activist, and they wrote this book. They talk about how activism is like a mycelium network. Basically, mushrooms and plants have these underground mycelium networks, root systems, essentially, that connect to each other but are out of sight. And how we only see the mushrooms that form from those networks. And that is a result of the networks working. But we don't get to see how that all happens. So they say activism is like a mycelium network underground doing the work, and that the winds are like mushrooms, but not all actions taken can form a whole mushroom. It's the collectiveness of each action that combines to make future mushrooms possible. It's like all this work is happening, but we don't see it all the time. We only see the horrible things that are happening. So while it may feel like the things aren't working as individual actions, we might, and that we might feel powerless, a mushroom is coming. We just can't see it yet. So any failures are just signals and the groundwork for future success. Because they're talking about, like, specifically in climate activism, like, there were so many movements around, like, preventing oil lines being built that failed. But it's, so those failures set the groundwork for their success in shutting one down. So it's all setting the groundwork for future success. It's not useless action, because you're building a foundation of action to make it known that we're not okay with this. So acting.
It also makes me think of, like, how people are, like, boycotting, like, Starbucks. And you think, like, oh, that's not going to do anything. Like, I've been doing it because I used to drink Starbucks. And then I saw, like, some information where it was like, no, they lost so much money to the point where the government is telling people they're not allowed to boycott anymore. But there's no way to, like, do anything about it.
Starbucks went bankrupt. And direct five actions, others get are the closing. Goods. Yeah, it's happening. It's working.
It's happening.
So yeah, acting in opposition, even though it feels like it won't make an impact, just because we can't see it anyway, does not mean the mushroom isn't coming. We're going to see it, I think, in our lifetime. I have a feel. I've had a feeling about that since I was a little kid. I feel like it's happening. It's something big is going to happen in this period, and it's coming.
The untethering.
Yeah. So the mushroom is coming. We just maybe don't see it yet. And, like, they say, like, the first through the door is the bloodiest. That was something Substantial said at the Tribbles episode, where it's like, that is true. We are laying the groundwork. Even if we do not live to see the mushroom will happen. We just have to have faith that that's going to happen through these actions. So trying is better than complacency. That's the moral of my section as well.
No, I love that. I love the mushroom. I love just, like, that whole, that imagery. Also, like, just even specifically thinking about climate change, just as, like, an offshoot here, thinking about all the things that climate activists were doing and the fact that like the ozone is starting to heal itself. Like it's, I remember when I was really little, the ozone was very scary because there was a straight up huge hole, and it's not normal anymore, but it is significantly less harmful. Like it's not as in danger as it was. It's because we did all those things. And at the time they seemed like nothing. They seemed like little things, but it's a big deal. It's even just thinking about like, lead in the paint and how, you know, it affected the learning of a lot of people. And now we have entire political groups that got lead poisoning.
Yeah.
And there it shows. It shows. So, yeah.
Places you can boycott: Starbucks, McDonald's, HP. I have an HP monitor box from my job that purchased a monitor for me that was a million years ago. Don't shop there anymore. They're canceled. Don't go to HP. There's so many people. There's so many little things you can do, even if it's just share copy link.
Yeah, and watching. Yeah, there are times where like I was just super inundated with videos from Gaza, and I like valued them because the mainstream media isn't covering those things. Right. No. And like, you know, when they see the news in the film, too, they're like, they don't even know that yet. They don't know that it's us yet. Right. And it was all reactionary. It was all like, it was still not covering what they needed to cover.
Yeah. So
and that's what they'd be doing now. So all that to say that boycotting works, and, you know, it might feel like you're the drop in the ocean, right? But it does just take one drop to unsettle the top of the water. I think there's a bastardization of something Gandhi said maybe once. I do recommend watching a movie, and I recommend watching it several times. I also recommend... No, I'm not going to recommend that right now. I will say that given the brief time that Us and Get Out were on Netflix, that it does, like I saw this quote from Guillermo del Toro that said that it's kind of like a scary place for creators that they're relying on streaming services, because if a streaming service decides like we're not going to have that anymore, something falls through, it's just gone. That piece of media is like erased. So, you know, supporting artists and like, you know, keeping their work and buying their work and stuff is really important. I would just say maybe wait until hopefully PL says something, because he's gotta. That's so crazy. I can't, like, the fact that this can exist and for him to have such a critique on America and then not critique America.
Yeah. It's super weird. It doesn't make sense.
Is it because you got money now, bud?
Yeah.
Are you afraid of the money?
Yeah. Or he's worried about the consequence because, like, people's careers are getting ended by talking about it. But, like,
he made Get Out.
I know. Yeah. It just doesn't make sense. I totally agree. Like, it just doesn't make sense.
He made a character that just, like, shoots a white woman in the stomach. He just, a character that just kills a bunch of white people.
Yeah. It's really weird for him to like care.
You're in control of your whole career.
White supremacist Zionist America. Any sense? Care about? Yeah. And before anyone comes for us, I had 160 plus relatives die in the Holocaust. You don't need to tell me leverage the genocide of my people to validate another one. So don't do it. It's dumb. You're just, you don't know what you're talking about, friend. That's okay.
That's learn. For sure. Yeah. Learn. Yeah, learn. Don't be so ignorant. Yeah. And my excuse is that I'm brown. So come on, try. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I hope it excited you about this film. I hope it maybe set a fire under you to do something about the real issues that are happening that we can see in a fun way in the film, but in a really terrifying, real horror way in the world. Because that's how our show works. Yeah. That's literally what we do. Yeah. So
no corporations own us. Yeah, we don't get paid for this, and unintentionally, because if we did, I guess it would be bad, because we have to not say things.
Nobody tells me what to say. Yeah. And that is both a strength and a weakness. Mm-hmm. I would love money, but we don't have that. So we're going to use that as our... we're going to use it. Yeah. We're going to take advantage of our unaffiliated status right now. So. Yeah. Somebody will hear us. Someone did once really like that we were vocal in 2020. Yeah. So maybe somebody else will be cool. So we got a lot. This series is actually going to be 2 months long because we have a lot of things that we want to cover. It's just such an exciting series to do and some things that we want to talk about. And so I hope you stay tuned. Let us know what you think. What's your favorite Jordan Peele movie? And don't get married.
Delete your kids.
Mm-hmm. Or you and your kids come up from the underground and come at you and your kids.
And you're like, I get it, friend.
Yeah, like, no. We could be cool.
I totally understand.
Yeah, you're right, man. You're right.
Yeah. I should have known. Oops.
All right, bye.
Bye.